First of all,
this is the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
It might be cool, I don't know. And if it's not, I don't care.
The BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Bill Simmons works for ESPN. He's also named the sports guy, and he writes a comical sports column. You must be a popular dude.
The BS Report.
It's got a real dirty sound, like a rusty steak knife cutting through a well-aged steak.
Now.
Here's Bill Simmons.
All right, let's get right to it this week. The creator of FootballOutsiders.com and a regular guest last year on the BS Report, Mr. Aaron Schatz. How you doing?
I am doing well, although obviously still a bit in shock as a Patriots fan, as I am sure you are.
Yeah, it's like being in a serious accident and then not really realizing the ramifications for like 2 weeks. Like, oh my God, I lost my leg.
My position is almost sort of the opposite. I feel like it was a horrible accident, but it almost looked worse than it really was. Obviously, the loss to Miami exposed a lot of weaknesses of this team, but at the same time, it's not like you're going to see every single opponent running out a gimmick offense that the Patriots are not prepared for, which is exactly what happened this week. I mean, there's only a limited number of gimmick offenses that nobody's prepared for that it is possible to run out there. So I think that while I think this, you know, it demonstrates the problems that they have on both offense and defense and that they're not as good a team as they were last year, you know, no duh, they don't have Tom Brady anymore, or Asante Samuel for that matter. I don't think that it shows that they're, you know, one of the worst teams in the league or anything along those lines.
And they have a very, very easy schedule.
And they still have the easy schedule, even though, you know, the Dolphins obviously were considered to be part of that easy schedule.
Yeah.
But it's still an easy schedule. And frankly, the same goes for Buffalo. That's why Buffalo's looking like a really good bet to make the playoffs now, because they're 3-0 with the same easy schedule that the Patriots have.
I'm a little more concerned than you, and here's why. I think we, on offense, we have two above-average skill guys, Welker and Moss. So Moss has basically been eliminated because the quarterback can't get him the ball, and I still think he's going to check out within the next 3 weeks.
It's a serious problem because Brady was throwing 6 deep passes a game last year,
right.
Passes that went more than 15 yards in the air, and this year Castle is throwing 2 per game.
And I think my biggest fear after that Jets game was that the team subsequently were going to study the tape and say, oh, yeah, he never threw the ball over 10 yards in that game. And that's kind of how Miami played Moss, and he never did anything. The other problem is Welker, you know, who's the evolutionary Troy Brown in this offense, a guy that relies on a lot of those quick slants, wide receiver screens, all kind of different throws that where you need a quarterback who can make a precise play, efficient play. And now we don't have that anymore.
Right,
I worry both of those guys have basically been nullified by this injury. It's like we lost 3 guys with the Brady injury.
His throws are a little off. The other, of course, is that having Moss go deep frees things up underneath for Welker.
Exactly.
And it also frees things up for the running game. And one of the reasons why the running game was number one in our ratings last year per play is that they were usually facing, you know, 6 in the box.
Yeah.
It's not that they're really the greatest running game in the league. So,
well, teams are asking them to run. They did not want us to throw.
They were begging them to run.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me? The Jets, what did the Jets have, like 1 guy at a 3-point stance last year?
Yeah.
But I do think they need to free Castle up to go long a little bit. If they don't feel like he can do it, then maybe it's time to try O'Connell out. But on defense, I mean, look, you have a defense where the linebackers are slow but smart and experienced. So the best thing to throw out there at them is something they don't expect, which usually does not work in the NFL because NFL linebackers are too fast. Because
right.
You're the only linebacking core in the league that's probably not too fast to run a spread option against. So, but they're going to be prepared for it now in the future. It's like, you know, Miami was the only team that got to do this. No one else gets to do this against them. So,
I'm not concerned about the defense. I just think that was a fluky, weird game that they, you know, that's not going to happen again. I'm concerned about the offense that cannot score.
I still think that they're making the playoffs, especially with a lot of other teams in the AFC struggling. But if I wanted, you know, what team should be really happy about what happened last week, it should be Buffalo. Because they've now got a 1-game lead,
yep.
And now you really see that the Patriots do have weaknesses. And the more, obviously beating Oakland by a couple of points is not a really, you know, promising victory. But the more they win, the more they look for real. So
well, when you're talking about the when you talk about the weaknesses, so last year the weaknesses, basically in a nutshell, were slow linebackers. This year you had the slow linebackers except for Mayo. Then you have the secondary, which just isn't as good as it was last year. Then you have the offensive line, which is a little banged up. Then you have the fact that they can't throw the deep ball anymore. Then you have the fact that Maroney's banged up and they really don't have an above average running back. Then, on top of everything else, on special teams, their number one cornerback is their return guy, which apparently I'm the only one who thinks this is a bad thing, like that you have Ellis Hobbs running back and forth on 60 pass plays,
run plays,
and then he's returning kicks.
The good
kicks.
Thing about being a return guy is he gets to go rest after that.
Yeah, that's true. But what other team has their number one cornerback as their return
guy? A lot of teams have done in the past, Nate Clements being the number one return guy.
What about this year?
Pac-Man Jones.
What about this year, though?
Oh, I can't remember. I can't remember who the return
guys are. I think they're the only team.
Teams change them a lot early in the season sometimes. They're trying out different guys.
This is a guy who's shaky anyway. Like, if he's your number one cornerback, you're not feeling that great.
Well, unfortunately, he's too short.
Yeah.
But
I don't know. I see a lot of holes. I see nothing over the past 2 weeks to change my thought.
I guess I'm just more optimistic. People always tell me that I root for Boston sports teams as if I was a Chicago fan instead of a Boston fan. So.
Oh, I like that. Yeah, are you sold on Buffalo or no?
I'm not sold on Buffalo yet, but in the same way that the Patriots have weaknesses, but man, their schedule is easy, I'm not sold on Buffalo, but man their schedule
yeah.
is easy. I mean, the NFC West is so bad.
Yeah.
St. Louis is the worst team we've ever measured through 3 weeks.
I was just going to ask you about that. You used that, one of my favorite phrases, historically bad.
Last year, I had to track how the Patriots were doing against every team that we've tracked back to 95, and they ended up as the best team we had ever tracked. This year, we're going to be doing the same thing, except we're going to be doing it with the Rams and playing the part of the Colts and Cowboys last year, the teams that are so good, but because the Patriots were so amazing, no one noticed, are the Chiefs and Lions, who are really bad, but the Rams are going to be so hideous that nobody's going to notice just how historically bad the Chiefs and Lions are.
Right.
It's not a good year in Missouri if you like the NFL football.
It's funny. I was so mad that I clicked on your site today and you had a whole article about this, because I was thinking about potentially writing a column about, could these be the three worst teams ever in the same season?
It's
but
pretty
you guys
close.
Did it. But I've never seen three teams that their games are over by the end of the first
the
quarter.
Exception, the similar season was 2000. But in 2000, there was a little bit of a reason, because it was still the second year of the expansion Browns. 2000 is a really amazing year where there were just because the best teams in the league and the worst teams were in the same division, which was the AFC Central at the time. So, I mean, the Browns and Bengals were horrible, but then the Cardinals were horrible too, and it was just a really awful year for bad teams. But this team, I mean, this year is a little bit like that. And, of course, Kansas City and St. Louis are on the schedule for the AFC East. Buffalo still gets to play both of them.
Right.
So, golly, I mean, buy your playoff tickets now, Toronto fans.
Well, here's a loophole, I think, that with the way they set up these conferences and these divisions, where you only have four teams in a division, and you can just catch the right division in the right year in your schedule, and I think it's a significant advantage. Like, if you happen to draw the NFC West this year, like the Pats did, and the rest of the AFC East teams, and actually the NFC East teams too, that's a three-game swing in the standings for you.
Well,
you
even
you're
better
not playing
is if
anybody
you catch,
good.
Even better is if you catch two divisions at the right time. And while Denver obviously looks a lot better than we expected going into the season, San Diego, you know, may not be quite as good as we expected going into the season, and Oakland and Kansas City are still terrible.
Yeah.
So to play those two divisions, it's really ridiculous, and that's why you and I were both kind of high on the Jets going into the season, and I think that now that's sort of been transferred over to Buffalo, because, look, a two-game lead in the standings at this point of the season is pretty huge, and Buffalo has a two-game lead on the Jets and a one-game lead on the Patriots.
I'm going to disagree with you a little bit there. I'm not sold that this Bills Jets thing has played out to the fullest extent yet. The Jets can throw the ball and they can do some stuff, and it's not inconceivable to me. You know, they just played the Pats and they played San Diego on a Monday night.
Right.
So two pretty tough games. And yet in week two, they played a Patriots team that was extremely fired up to prove that their season wasn't over without Tom Brady. I think if they had played the Pats in week three after they had proved their point, maybe that game turns out a little different.
No, I don't think so, because I think a lot of what happened this week had to do with the the defense, the offense that they played, the offense that Miami played, where, I mean, they got together after 2 weeks, and it turns out their quarterback's coach was at Arkansas last year, and they were like, okay, we are hopeless here. We are desperate. What can we do? And they came out with this thing, and they happened to have a perfect two running backs to do this thing with, and the Jets wouldn't do anything like that.
Yeah, but defensively, though, I think they would have played Castle differently than they did in week two once they realized that this guy cannot throw more than
15 yards. Threw it long against Kansas City to Randy Moss, and we'd like to see him do that a little more.
I would just like, you know, I've always said this theory. Madden is actually the one who came up with this theory, but if you got a guy like Moss, at least three times a game, you got to just throw it down there.
Yep, and it doesn't matter who the quarterback is.
Yeah, just throw it down. He might catch it. You might get an interference. Like, the worst thing that happens is it's a 45-yard interception. But it's something you have to do three times.
Honestly, the same thing goes with Terrell Owens. It's not an issue because Romo's a good quarterback. But if you threw, like, Brad Johnson in there now as their backup, you just want to chuck it down the field to him a couple of times just for the heck of it. The Buffalo should probably do it with Lee Evans. I mean, he's not as tall, but still.
Do you think this Dallas offense could be as good as the Pats offense last year?
No. Oh my God, no. I mean, the Patriots offense last year was absurd, ridiculous, off the charts. The Cowboys offense this year is really, really good, but it's not absurd, ridiculous, historically off the charts.
I feel like it has the potential, though. Like, even in that Green Bay game, I feel like they could have had 45 points in that game. They just kind of screwed up in the red zone a couple times.
Yeah, but see, that's part of offense, is screwing up in the red zone. Which
but
seems
maybe
to be kind of a theme this year where a lot of good offenses seem to be having trouble in the red zone. But even by our numbers, I mean, Dallas is only fourth. Obviously, we have not thrown opponent adjustments into that yet, but it's not like the Cleveland defense that they played the first week is a good one. I mean, they are a good, very good offense. They're not in the same historical league as last year's Patriots. They're not, you know, spawning comparisons to the 94 49ers.
I'm not saying they have yet. I'm saying I think the potential's there. Because
no,
in the first 2 weeks,
I think
on.
They're really missing the depth. They're really missing the depth at wide receiver.
But they got that solved in week three because Miles Austin came back.
Yeah, but I don't know if he's quite what they had. What the
but he can at least run down the field and take somebody with him.
And the other is the depth at line. We have to see what happens if line injuries start coming in. Obviously,
I think the Cowboys are going to be better. I think they're going to get better as this goes along because, man, when they put out that offense where they had the three receivers with Witten and Felix Jones, I don't know how you stop that.
I'm more like the having the secondary that's got Newman and Pack and Jenkins and Henry. That's a pretty good secondary right there.
Yeah. Well, Felix Jones, I think, is he's kind of like what we got out of Kevin Faulk last year, but on a whole other level.
But younger, but more like a Reggie Bush.
Well, but I mean, like when they put him in as their kind of third down, whatever type of back, he has the home run potential that Kevin Faulk didn't have last year.
Like yeah,
if you,
I mean,
just,
Fox,
if you match
Fox's
him up.
A nice piece, but Fox's not a great player. He's a good piece when played in the proper role. Felix Jones looks really promising.
If you match him up to the 2007 Pats, Moss, slight edge over Owens. Brady, edge over Romo. Welker, edge over Creighton. Jason Witten, much better than any Patriots tight end. Felix Jones, better than Faulk. I'm just talking about passing. I mean, it's not inconceivable to me that they could just roll off 40 points a game for seven straight weeks or something.
Yeah, I just don't see it.
I'm not selling you on this one.
No, you're not selling me on this one. Sorry.
All right, we'll have to revisit. We'll revisit when down the road. But I'm telling you, I think this Cowboys offense. I thought they could have won that game 50-10.
We also have to answer the question of what happened the last 2 years at the end of the season. And is that random chance, or does this team really have something about it that causes it to fade December? I'm not talking about the playoffs here. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about the fact that for two straight years they've collapsed in December. I mean,
you're talking about the Cowboys.
Yeah, I mean, they blew the division 2 years ago. Last year they didn't blow the division, but they didn't rest their starters and still got clobbered by the Redskins and barely beat the Lions and got clobbered by the Eagles, and not in that order, and then both years they've gone into the playoffs and lost at home to an inferior team. I think they lost on the road against Seattle because Seattle was a division champion. But, you know, we have to ask ourselves what's happened at the end of the last two seasons, and is that real and something to watch out for this year? Because until you can kind of answer that question, there's this little voice in the back of my head going, watch out with Dallas in December and see what happens.
Although the whole Barber thing has now manifested itself, and maybe maybe they're in a different place than they were the last 2 years.
Just well, yeah, Barber's a better player than Jones, yeah. Sure.
And if I have a red flag with them, Romo in the red zone really makes some. He makes those same decisions that Favre used to make from 2000 to 2006, but the announcers would never criticize him for it because mm-hmm. they would, oh, he's a gamer. He's just trying to he's trying to make something happen. Romo makes some terrible decisions in the red zone.
He's just having fun out there.
He's really the new Favre. It's amazing. He right down to all of his bad habits. But I'm talking about new Favre, far from
yeah, with
2000
Joe
to 2006.
With Joe Namath's social life.
I think, would you agree that they are the team to beat? Or no?
No, I still have to struggle with the fact that our projection systems have been down on them the last couple of years. And they're better than our projections are. And I don't know why our projection system sees them as down, despite, you know, besides the injury stuff that I've talked about in the past. That being said, they narrowly beat Philadelphia at home. Hmm. When you narrowly beat a team at home, that shows that your two teams are equal. Because you're supposed to beat a team narrowly at home. So I don't think that they're heads and tails ahead of Philadelphia, let alone like we start throwing, you know, other teams into the conversation like Green Bay or the Giants or who I don't think are as good as Dallas and Philadelphia. Indianapolis if everybody ever gets healthy and so forth.
I have Dallas, Philly 1-2, very close. And then after that, I think there's a drop off, and then you get to that Tennessee Giants group. I'm sold on Tennessee. I just think that their defense is going to keep them in this.
Well, we thought their defense would kind of come back to the pack a little bit, and it hasn't. And let's be honest, now they have a quarterback who's not going to be making mistakes all the time. And I love Chris Johnson, man. That guy's a player.
And it kind of feels like they're keeping him under wraps a little bit.
He's going to explode on the league in the second half?
Yeah, they don't want to unleash him yet. It's like Fisher hasn't gotten to the point where he's like, now! You know, and then he gets unleashed. Because even that Houston game, I felt like he could have rushed for 7-8 yards every
There's a
run.
Little line on Lendale White's scale, and when his weight passes the line, that the alarm goes off in Jeff Fisher's office. Says, okay, unleash Chris Johnson now. Lendale is fat.
Well, and if you've watched any of the Titans games, he's clearly, unquestionably, no doubt about it, their best running back. And it makes me wonder if they've – yeah, I don't think it's a bad idea to baby rookie running backs the first 6 weeks of the season and kind of save – especially if you think you're going to play 19 or 20 games.
No, and I like the throwing them out on the side, you know, lined up out as a wide receiver thing the way that the Saints do with Bush and the Eagles do with Westbrook. And then the other team has to question, do we have to cover this guy with a corner or not? Or are they going to head it out to the slightly inferior, you know, larger running back? Or what are we going to do here?
So you're not sold on the Giants because you hate the Giants?
No, just because the teams that they've beaten, you know, they just haven't played quite as impressively given the teams they've played against as Dallas and Philadelphia have. But
That's it?
Yeah, they look pretty good.
They barely beat the Bengals last week.
Yeah, this is a thing around the league. This happens.
Well, did you see the end of their game? I don't know how they don't get the second playoff. The timeout came late. That 4 seconds left. I still feel like with 4 seconds left, you can take one quick slant or try something. Try to at least punch it in one time, or I don't know. I just felt like the Bengals left a win on the field in that one.
You know, there was some interesting, yeah. But
what are you feeling about Denver?
You know, they look pretty good, don't they? But obviously, you're talking about a team that clobbered a bad team in the first week, and in the second week got lucky, but against a really good team. And in the third week, wow, they scored a lot of points on the Saints. That makes them just like flag football team down the street, really. I mean, everybody scores points on the Saints. So, I mean, they look good. I when we updated our projections before the season started, I was pretty shocked, but I'd been riding the Houston bandwagon for so long, but when I updated things based on sort of lineup changes before the first game, I took Houston out of our official predictions and put Denver in there in the playoffs. So the idea that they're making a playoff run is not shocking to me, but I don't think they're like two games better than San Diego or anything like that.
Have you seen the stat where it does like the points, yards per game, and one other one, and 2007 Pats versus 2008 Broncos, and it's like identical?
Yeah, okay. I'd like to see that same stat with every team that has played against the New Orleans Saints for the last 16 weeks.
Not a fan of the Saints defense, huh?
I mean, come on, man. I mean, you probably would beat the Patriots and the Broncos, for crying out loud.
I will say this. The one thing about the Brady injury and the Manning injury is, or, you know, I still think he's hurt. He's playing hurt. It's obvious. He's barely moving around. But it has leveled the playing field, and we're getting set up now for, I think, one of the more interesting seasons that we've had. After 3 weeks, I could see 15 different Super Bowl matchups, and none of them would surprise me.
Yeah, and a lot of them include teams that are 1-2 right now.
Yeah.
I mean, is there any reason not to believe that Indianapolis could get healthy and put it back together? Is there any reason not to believe that Jacksonville couldn't get healthy and put it back together? I mean, their guys are out for longer than Indianapolis' guys are out, but San Diego is a good team at 1-2.
There's
a lot of good stuff going on out there.
And a lot of the teams that I think what's interesting about this year is maybe have half the league. All of them can do one thing really well, which in the past maybe you'd have these teams where you're like, man, I don't know how the hell that team's 8-4. But even you look at a team like Minnesota, you can't run on Minnesota. So like a team like Carolina, they fell behind in that game. It was it. They had to throw every down, and that was they
I think you're going to end up with a playoffs that's going to be very much like the NBA playoffs, particularly the Western Conference playoffs were the last couple of years, where you had a lot of teams that were good but no teams that were great. And every team had certain teams that they matched up well against and other teams that was a terrible matchup for them.
Yeah.
So it didn't matter, actually. It didn't matter as much what your win-loss record was going into the playoffs. What matters were what were your strengths and weaknesses, what were your opponent's strengths and weaknesses, and how did that, you know, were you Dallas stuck going up against Golden State kind of thing. And I think you're going to have the same thing. And look, it's terrible. It's a bummer if you're a Patriots fan, if you're a Colts fan, if you're a Chargers fan, if you're a Seahawks fan. But if you're an NFL fan in general, I mean, this year looks like it's going to be really, really fascinating all year long.
I agree. I think we're headed for one of those years where we're going to change our mind on who the best four teams are every week for like 10 straight weeks.
2003 was like that a lot. Although in 2003, Kansas City got off to this great start and then just collapsed. But then you had the Patriots and you had the Titans and you had the Colts and you had the Eagles and you had the Panthers. And I think were the Rams still good that year? I mean, it was a pretty good year, but no, it was really no outstanding team. And this year's looking a little bit like that. With the exception that while there's no outstanding team, there are three really, 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 really bad teams. Really bad. Really
and
bad.
Two of them are in the NFC, but at the same time, I think we've seen potentially a shift here where the NFC now has the juice.
Oh, absolutely. If you look at our ratings, it's a lot of NFC teams up on the top.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think part of that is that the NFC is more stratified between the good teams and the bad teams, and the AFC, with a lot of the good teams in the last few years struggling with injuries, sounds like just a big mush of teams. Oh, and then, by the way, Oakland and Kansas City are awful.
I mean, potentially, NFC East might have three of the best four or five teams in the league by any calculation.
Some people are saying, I mean, NFC East, can you imagine if they go, like, undefeated against the rest of the league? I mean,
wow.
It's not going to be – they're not going to do that well. I mean, you know, the Giants and the Redskins especially
will
eventually lose to teams from the other divisions. But, I mean, that division is pretty hardcore right now.
So you have three top five teams in the NFC East. You have Minnesota, Chicago – and Green Bay, all who I think are pretty good teams. I even think Chicago's
pretty
good.
I still feel like Chicago is, you know, they're scoring with mirrors.
Do they win that game last week if Devin Hester's healthy? He makes one special play,
sure, one
right?
play, and that team doesn't go to overtime, sure.
Yeah, I feel like he cost them the game last week. And then NFC South, Carolina, Tampa. New Orleans, I guess, defensively not there, but at least they're going to have to make
it. No, but offensively, of course, they're totally there.
They're going to have to make it. You're going to have to score 30 points to beat them, or you're not going to beat them. And then Atlanta,
don't say it.
Saying, out of all the bad teams, probably the most functional bad team, right?
Miami is the most functional bad team. I think we saw that last week.
So Miami versus Atlanta, your pick of Miami.
Yeah.
That
would be a fun game. Let's watch that one. That would be good.
Atlanta can run the ball.
Don't talk about Atlanta being 2-1, and that's the other thing.
No, I don't care that they're 2-1. I'm just saying they're a good, bad team.
Michael Turner... he's doing a lot better than I expected, not because he's more talented than I expected, because their offensive line is doing better than I expected. But, again, I think that the 12 carries for 42 yards in week two is a lot more indicative of what you're going to be seeing for him for a lot of the year than what he did against Detroit and Kansas City. You know, that being said, his schedule is easier than I think I realized when I was doing my projections. He should be able to run all over the Saints. He should be able to run all over Oakland. He should be able to run all over St. Louis. But, I mean, he has to play Minnesota. He has to play Philadelphia, Chicago, Green Bay. And these are teams that can stop the run. And he's not going to be putting up 100 yards every week.
I think if you had the crappy team round robin, they make the finals.
Who, Atlanta?
Yeah.
Yeah, probably.
I think it's in the
Miami-Atlanta
finals.
Yeah, probably.
If you did the top eight or whatever, or bottom eight, I guess
sure.
You would say.
Yeah, I like that. That works for me. When do we get to have that? Is that on ESPN6?
I think that's something they should do instead of the bye week. They should just make, you know.
Could we do that at the end for the playoffs? Like,
yeah.
Can we have an extra game on like a Wednesday night where the two worst teams play each other and the winner gets the number one pick or something?
I've always wanted them to do that. Crapapalooza. Hey, give me an over-under for whatever week that you think Matt Cassel will be replaced as the Patriot quarterback.
The honest truth, I don't think he's going to be.
So you take the over on whatever over-under I gave you.
I think that they drafted O'Connell with the idea that they needed a better long-term backup, but they're just not. They just don't feel comfortable with a rookie quarterback, and Castle's been in the system, and they feel comfortable with him.
Let me throw this at you. Castle's contract expires at the end of the year, and they have O'Connell locked up for 4.
I understand that, but if they're making a playoff run, and I think they will be, if they're more comfortable with Castle, they could honestly care less what his contract status is for next year. If there's anything we've learned about the Patriots, it's that they want what they want out of you now. No matter what your contract status is next year, they really don't care.
If they like Castle, how come they had Sims and Mate coming in for an interview the day before week one?
Because they like those guys better than Gutierrez, maybe? I don't know.
Gutierrez isn't on the team.
Gutierrez is on the team.
It's a practice squad.
You know, they upped him last week.
Yeah, because Brady's on the injured reserve.
Right. At the time, they had to decide, do we bring Gutierrez back or do we bring in a veteran?
Yeah, but Sims or Rite wouldn't have played in the practice squad.
No, they would have been on the team, and Gutierrez is on the team now.
They would have been on the team, and Matt Cassel would have been on waivers. That's what worries me about this whole thing. I am convinced that they were going to waive Matt Cassel for Sims or Rite after week one because he was so bad in the preseason, free agent at the end of the year, and I just think they're like,
you can't waive
what?
Anybody
screw this.
For Rite because Rite is Mr. Glass from Unbreakable, and you throw him out there, he will complete 10 passes in a row for 2 touchdowns and then break every bone in his body.
Is there any QB we can get? I guess Bulger's contract is too bad. Like, there's no way to get that.
What's up with that, by the way? That is, I mean, talk about your desperation moves.
Mark Bulger?
Oh, my God. Sidney
Matt Barry.
Bulger.
Matt Barry liked him as a fantasy sleeper this year.
Yeah, well, you know, listen, I thought their offense would be okay, but their defense is, you know, their defense is horrible. Again, like, you know, New Orleans is or Detroit's, but, I mean, that's right. I mean, their defense is the worst we've ever tracked. Them and Detroit are the two worst defenses we've ever tracked through 3 weeks, and the solution is to bench the quarterback?
Your $10 million quarterback.
Look at your film, okay? Look at what the problem is on your team. It's the offensive line. It's the fact that you only have one wide receiver, and it's your entire defense. It is not Mark Bulger.
It's too bad that you guys can't track bad coaching, that there's no – because Linehan would have to be in the top 2 or 3.
If he still has his job at the end of the year, I'll be amazed.
He's always been terrible. I thought – I picked him as my 2006 sleeper, and I still feel like it was a good pick. I just had no idea that he was that bad as a coach.
That
he killed them the
nowhere.
First 5 weeks, yeah.
Fakir Brown was their best corner.
You mean the New England Patriots, Fakir Brown? When do we pick him up?
I feel like that's coming, too. Don't you feel like that's coming?
Oh, there's no question. I mean, we've been on the cornerback scrap heap basically all season.
I hate that.
Yeah, it's never a good sign. Not a good sign.
Real cornerbacks.
Not a good sign for your playoff hopes. Anything else we didn't discuss?
I don't know. It's pretty, you know.
We hit everything?
We all know good teams are now, and there's just a lot of mush. It's interesting. I guess the only thing we didn't discuss is Baltimore kind of starting to live up to my a little bit to my prediction, although obviously it's only been 2 games.
Settle down. Settle down.
Against bad teams, but still, that's what I said, man. I said the division was going to be kind of lame.
I don't think your system, as much as I like it, had any way to calibrate what happened to Houston this week, where they basically started the season with 3 straight road games.
Oh, no, we have a way to calibrate it. I just didn't know that it was going to happen.
Right, you didn't know. That's what I'm saying.
Because when we did our projections, there was a game week two in Houston. That
what a nightmare.
Now.
That's a nightmare.
Yeah.
Although you could say that if they can somehow come out of this week with a win, then all of a sudden they have 8 of their last 13 at home, and they're a pretty good home team.
And then Jacksonville is really in trouble.
Right. In Jacksonville's season, really, that 51-yard field goal, if it hooks, they're done. I don't even see them making the playoffs. It's funny how, you know, and on the other hand, with Gramatica and the Saints, if Gramatica makes that, although they probably would have given up the game-winning field goal.
Seriously,
anyway,
why do teams draft kickers and then waive them?
That's a great question.
Why'd they blow a pick on Taylor Melhoff if they did not feel that Taylor Melhoff was going to be a starting NFL kicker?
I have a good last question for you, a good ender. Give us one fantasy sleeper.
Oh, for this week, I'm not. God, I haven't even.
Not for this
about
week.
It.
I'm saying for the rest of the season. Somebody that you feel has not lived up to what his potential is, and he's about to.
You've stumped me. I totally haven't.
I stumped you.
About this.
Chris Johnson.
Oh, listen. I still think Rashard Mendenhall. I feel like I'm going to put him on the milk carton. Hello, guys. Rashard Mendenhall is on your team. Put him in the game. Hello.
He's starting this week.
Yeah, but he's starting this week against Baltimore. It's not exactly going to be, like, you know, the best example of his quality.
So you're saying wait for him to stink in week four and then trade for him?
Well, I mean,
not a bad game,
the question is Pittsburgh going to play him in the second half of the year? But, I mean, I think he's a really talented guy. I want to see more of him.
I like the rookie running backs this year. I think it was
They're a nice
class.
It's a great class.
I love Forte.
Rookie running backs.
Yeah, Forte, I think, is it makes you think if the Pats had had that Spygate pick and they had stumbled into Forte.
I think they hopefully learned their lesson with Maroney. This is not a team that builds its team around a stud running back. Don't take them that early in the draft. Given how they were going to use Maroney, taking him with a first-round pick didn't make any sense.
Did they learn the lesson, or did they just screw up the pick?
I don't know.
Would you rather have Joseph Addai? I think I would.
Yes, he's a little healthier, isn't he?
Yeah, Maroney, I think, has proven at this point.
He's a little healthier, and he has a much more entertaining accent.
And I think Maroney has proven that he cannot stay in the field. Three straight years is a nice
health is a skill.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, we'll let you go. Coming back 4 weeks from now, you're coming on every 4 weeks during the season, and then throughout the playoffs, and hopefully this year in the playoffs, we're not going to have a podcast that people actually replay for its comedic value, like our Super Bowl preview.
You know, the Super Bowl preview does say that the only thing stupider than thinking that the teams were equal was thinking the Giants had no chance. But people like to ignore the second half of the sentence.
Yeah, but I guess if they were making an attack ad on that podcast, they would just cut out the second sentence.
This is why I am not running for president.
Aaron Schatz, we can look for you at footballoutsiders.com. See you again in a couple weeks.
You got it.
All right, thanks. All right, now it's time for really what's going to be my favorite segment maybe in the history of the BS Report. The first ever Johnny Are You Worried Yet where the Yankees have actually been eliminated from the playoffs. So he's not even worried anymore because they're gone. So let's get his reaction. We're going to call him at work right now.
Complex Litigation, this is John.
Johnny.
Oh, there he is.
Johnny.
Oh, Willie. I had a feeling you'd be calling today.
I have a new segment for you. We created it today. It's called Johnny, Were You Worried?
Oh, I thought you were calling about the Clay Aiken news.
I actually almost called you yesterday and gave you the, are you sitting down?
Shocking, boy, I'll tell you.
Yeah, it's been a tumultuous week.
It really has.
Entertainment, sports, yeah, it's crazy.
The Patriots lose, Clay Aiken comes out, the Yankees get eliminated, they close Yankee Stadium, there's a lot going on.
Walk us through your emotions on Sunday night as Yankee Stadium had a big stake driven into its heart.
It's funny, at first I was a little bemused. I don't know if that's an emotion or not, maybe. Because I caught the celebration sort of the pregame show a little late in the game because I was out to dinner with my parents, and I got home and it was like, I don't know, a little after 7, I guess, 7:15 maybe. So I started watching it, and like, they had this thing where they did like the introductions of the starting lineup from the first game in 1923, Of course, everybody involved in the starting lineup was probably dead by like 1960.
Yeah.
So it was like actors or I don't know who it was, just guys in the old uniforms and like waving, tipping their caps to the crowd like they really were Tony Lazzari, but they're not Tony Lazzari. Yeah. So they like walk out the center field. So I was like, well, that's a little strange. Like, and you know, they're like the starting lineup for 1923, and guys are like tipping their cap. Wait a second, you're not Tony Lazzari. You know? You're just some like Broadway actor or whatever, you know?
That was like when we were watching European Vacation. They kept calling Rusty Rusty. I was like, you're not Rusty.
Exactly.
That's not Rusty.
Right. That's exactly right. You're not Babe Ruth, you know? So that part was strange.
Yeah.
But then they had a really good thing. I mean, they had, you know, the odd part was they had videos of all the great players or, you know, that had played at Yankee Stadium and the great Yankees at each position, which for some reason included Jesse Barfield in right field, which I still can't get over.
What?
Yeah, Jesse Barfield was one of the right fielders that was listed, along with Babe Ruth and Paul O'Neill. I mean, Jesse Barfield somehow made the cut.
That's bizarre.
Yeah, that's.
I forgot he was even a Yankee.
Yeah.
I always thought of him as a Blue Jay.
Exactly. So I don't know how Jesse Barfield made the cut, but he did. And then they would introduce like a couple of like living players were that really there, like at third base. They had Greg Nettles and they had Yankee great Wade Boggs. And and then, you know, sometimes they would have like if the guy was deceased, they would have his widow or his family, like Thurman Munson's son and Catfish Hunter's wife. And like they had Bobby Mercer's wife and his kids, and you know that got a little misty when they have, you know, these guys and they're getting hugged by like Goose Gossage and stuff. That was a little emotional, and you know the Yankees do the tradition thing right, and you know they have so much history and everything. So that part was all good, and then you know I watched the game, and after the game it was neat. I thought like, you know, the interesting thing was I thought of this during the game, and then it's been a news story afterwards, but. They had this video of like great Yankees pitchers, and they have like Lefty Gomez and Red Ruffing, and you know Catfish Hunter and Ron Guidry. No mention whatsoever of Roger Clemens. Like nothing. No mention. It was like the Soviet Union. Like they just erased the history. Like they erased people out of the picture.
Wow.
If they were like next to Stalin. The odd one that didn't even occur to me, but I read about it after the fact, is no mention of Joe Torre.
Really?
That's an awful job by the Steinbrenners. The guy's only won four World Series in the last 15 years, you know?
That's a little spiteful there, Mike.
Yeah, Doc, you gotta mention Torre in there. You gotta. I can understand the Clemens thing, but then ironically, like in this video montage by position, they included Knobloch, they included Andy Pettit and Giambi both were introduced as part of the starting lineups. So if it's just based on the Mitchell report, like really, you should have included Clemens in the montage, you know?
Yeah, that's a little weird. I would say even weirder was the fact that they kind of ignored the little subtle fact that Yankee Stadium was actually gutted for an entire season and then rebuilt from scratch, and that it really wasn't the same place that those guys played in.
That's exactly right. I mean, that's really the elephant in the room, is that it was more than a year. They closed it in 73, and they didn't start playing again until 76.
They played at Shea Stadium for 2 years while they gutted and rebuilt the stadium. Then they're like, yeah, Babe Ruth played here.
Right.
Lou Gehrig. No, they didn't.
Right. Like
they were kind of there, but
if the actual, it's like the same land, but of course everything is different about it. The fences are moved in, and they moved home plate forward, and you know all the configurations are different. So really, if they had brought back the 1923 starting lineup and ushered them out in the field, they'd all look around and be like, "Where are we right now?"
It's like the equivalent of, you know, let's say you buy your parents' house in 1970,
yeah,
and then you knock it down and you just build like one of those giant McMansions.
Right.
And then in 2008, you knock the McMansion down, but you have the whole party and you're like, hey guys, this is where our great grandfather lived. And no, it's not really.
Right.
No,
exactly.
You actually knock down the old house.
It is this spot on the world physically. Yes. But that's the only similarity.
I was so happy that the Red Sox got the last laugh. I can't tell you how much enjoyment it brought me, Johnny.
I was hoping that that would evoke the ghosts and the old echoes and the memories, and you know the Red Sox would go on a historic collapse and lose every game this week, and we'd be talking next Monday at a one-game playoff. But alas, it was not to be.
Not gonna
Sadly,
happen.
Not gonna happen. No, all she wrote.
I'm kind of hoping, and I have Mets friends, so Mets fans who are friends, so I hesitate to say this, but I'd love to see the Brewers knock the Mets out and not have New York in the baseball playoffs at all. I think that would be fun.
Imagine if the Mets choked again a second year in a row. Like,
oh, my God.
Part of me is kind of like, well, you know, I'll kind of root for the Mets. They're a New York team. But then the other part of me would kind of like to see the Mets collapse again.
The Mets fans
are
nervous.
On the fan, and you know,
yeah,
I would really like to. Part of me would really like to see that.
The Mets fans are nervous, and they've been nervous for about a week. I emailed my buddy Gus over the weekend, and we always do this thing, and somebody dies, or season's over, or somebody retires. How is the blank blank era for you?
Yeah.
So I jokingly asked, how is the 2008 Mets season for you? And he sent me back like, what do you mean? What are you talking about? It's not over. Like, it's like all defensive.
What happened?
I thought that was interesting.
Well, you know what has amazing potential is Sunday is the last game ever at Shea. And how about if the Mets like choke it away on that day and they don't make the playoffs? I mean, you could legitimately have a riot on your hands at Shea. People will be like ripping out seats and throwing them on the field. I mean, it could potentially be like that disco demolition night at Comiskey Park in the 70s, you know?
Oh, that would be fantastic.
How great would that be?
Sign me up.
And they choked, and then they're like, and please stay in your seats for the farewell to Shea Stadium.
I think it was really funny how the Yankee Stadium thing was treated versus the Shea Stadium thing.
Yeah, right.
Shea Stadium's actually...
Yeah,
Shea Stadium's been around really longer than New Yankee Stadium.
True.
And they never altered it or did anything to it. And it's had some good moments. I mean, it's really one of the most generic ballparks of all time.
Yeah, it's a cookie cutter, right.
But at the same time, it's had some good moments. It had one of the most famous baseball games in history. It had the Miracle Mets 1969. Nobody cares. Everybody's about Yankee Stadium.
And the Jets played there, right? You know, the Jets played at Shea. There's a lot of stuff there, you know?
Not a lot of good memories there, though.
True, but, you know, Joe Willie. Joe Willie at Shea. Come on, there's some memories there, maybe.
So what happens to this Yankees team? What are you predicting? What are you seeing?
I don't know. That's an excellent question. I mean, if you look at them on paper, there's a lot of holes, and they're big holes. I mean, Posada, I guess, can't catch until like June, and then I'm not sure he's an everyday catcher anymore. So I'm not sure who the everyday or platoon catcher is going to be. And I'm not sure who their center fielder is going to be because they have no confidence in Melky Cabrera. At second base, they have to be very shaky about Cano now, who had a massive step backwards.
Mm.
I mean, he and Pedroia used to be mentioned in the same breath, kind of like a Jeter Nomar thing, like who's better. And now it's like offensive to even discuss them in the same paragraph. It's offensive from even Yankee fans. Don't mention the two of them together because Pedroia is so much better.
I thought Cano was going to win the batting title. I really did. I don't know what happened to that guy.
Everybody keeps saying he has Rod Carew's swing, and you know, he plays like Rod Carew would play right now. Rod Carew's 70, you know.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I mean, so they have massive holes up the middle. I mean, catcher and center field. I mean, they're probably going to go out and throw the bank at CC Sabathia, you know. And so if you have a rotation of Sabathia, Wong coming back from injury, Jabba, you know, maybe they sign Mussina for one more year, and Hughes. I mean, I could talk myself into that. It's not a terrible rotation. You know, you can win some games with that rotation. Or if they throw an A.J. Burnett into the mix instead of Hughes.
Oh, please sign him. Please.
I mean, the only team he beats is the Yankees, unfortunately.
Please sign him. He'll be your new Pavano.
And Sabathia worries me. But yeah, he will be our new Pavano. That's a good point. Sabathia worries me because he's, you know, 20 years old and he's 400 pounds. And he's been dominant in the National League, but it's the National League.
I mean, we saw each other 2 weeks ago. We talked about if you're a free agent pitcher to be, you want to get traded to the National League in June or July and have that 3-month run.
Yeah.
Because your stats are going to be better. You're never going to look better at any point in your life than you were in your contract year in an inferior league. And I think Harden and Sabathia are both probably going to make $50 million more than they probably should have made.
Yeah, absolutely. It's the greatest career move ever if you're a pitcher is go pitch in the National League for 6 months or half a season and just before your free agent year. It'll make an exorbitant amount of money.
You got to give Clemens, who, you know, for the most part, probably not the sharpest tool in the shed, but he at least understood the National League, American League thing.
Yeah, he definitely did.
And went over there and he pocketed those paychecks for a few years, then roped the Yankees in one last one.
Yeah, then just held up the Yankees, right?
Yeah.
Backed up the Brinks truck.
He was at least smart enough to realize that.
Yeah, he had that going for him. Absolutely.
I think you're going to get, here's my prediction. I think Tex is going to sign with the Angels. He's just been awesome for them. And
Teixeira is, yeah.
Yeah, I think he's going to sign with them. And
well, that doesn't really break my heart because throwing $140 million at a first baseman.
That's not a good move.
When Posada's going to have to play some first and Matsui arguably is going to have to play some first. And a couple years down the line, this is blasphemous, but Jeter is going to have to be a first baseman. You know, so I don't want to get tied into Teixeira for 10 years and $1.50 or whatever, to play first base.
Right. The Angels need him, too. He completes their lineup, so to speak. I think you're headed for a Sabathia-Manny combo. I think Manny's price, they're going to make the playoffs. Manny's price is just going to go up. He's going to tear it up in the playoffs for however long they last. And then you're looking at 4 years, $110 million for him.
Well, I think Hank wants to do that, but, I mean, Cashman has to have learned the lesson about getting guys that are plus on the backside of 35 into, like, big-time contracts, because that's what's rendered the Yankees where they are now. Now, I like Manny offensively. I mean, I could learn to live with his antics when he's hitting 40
home runs. Can I interject there?
Yes, go ahead.
The answer to the question is 0.03 seconds. Here's the question. That's how long will it take Jacko to talk himself into the Manny Ramirez era in the Bronx? 0.03 seconds.
Now, look, Manny's a fantastic offensive player. I think he's the best hitter in baseball. But he's 36 years old. He's not getting any younger. And I don't want to pay him, even though it's not my money, but I don't want to pay him $100 million for 4 years. I just don't, you know. And I worry about Manny in the Bronx with all his, you know, friends and family. That could be problematic, too.
He doesn't even remember that he lived there.
I would enjoy the 19 games against the Red Sox because he has some twisted notion of wanting to get revenge against them. But,
valid.
I don't know.
Valid from, you know what? Nobody talks about this, but.
Well, true, because they did run him out of town and they leaked stories to the press and everything else.
They did all that, yeah. But also, you know, they just could have avoided everything by picking up his 2009 option in spring training. And they basically said, you know what? We don't know if you're worth it. Why don't you prove you're worth the $20 million? I don't know. That would make me mad if I was Manny.
Yeah, but he's going to make more years. Money in the long run, so he really should owe them a debt of gratitude. He really owes them a hearty handshake.
Well, at least they're not paying him to play for the Dodgers.
That's a good point, and he's only hitting 400.
Oh, wait. At least he's not, you know, emulating Babe Ruth's 1927 season. Oh, yeah, he is. Well, at least he hasn't ignited baseball in Los Angeles. Oh, wait, he did that too. Well, at least they're not the playoff favorites now and then. Oh, yeah, that's also the case. Yeah, it's worked out great.
Yeah, well, yeah, you're in the playoffs, though. You made the playoffs, so you can't say it was a bad move.
I was a voice crying in the wilderness.
You were.
Unfortunately, on my book sabbatical, but it never made sense to me. And, you know, I guess you could argue the other side is the Red Sox started playing better when they got rid of him, although you could argue the other side of that is that they played a series of terrible teams, and that's part of the reason their record got better. But just never made sense to me why you're downgrading from Manny Ramirez to Jason Bay. Like, why not just keep Manny? He's in a contract year, and it's not like he's that stupid that he wasn't going to try the last 2 months.
Yeah.
He's not going to just completely kill his market value for the rest of the season. Like, he would have turned it back on as soon as it became clear they weren't going to trade him.
There was no point, yeah, that he couldn't go anywhere else. It'll be decided in the playoffs, because if they go deep into the playoffs or go the whole way, then obviously, you know, they got rid of a clubhouse cancer and a headache, and they still won the ring. So, and if not, in a big situation, they can't score runs and Jason Bay strikes out, then, you know, you will be proven correct.
Johnny, let me take you back to last night, Cleveland-Boston.
Oh, God.
Cliff Lee in the mound.
Yes.
Guy in second base, two outs. Euclid is up. They intentionally walk Euclid to pitch to Jason Bay, who
but
then
he
got
a
single.
Hit.
He got a single. But I'm saying, under any circumstances, would you intentionally walk Kevin Euclid to pitch to Manny Ramirez?
No, my God, no, never.
No,
so that's what the defense rests. Teams think of Jason Bay.
The defense rests. It's a righty going, it's a lefty, and
yeah, but
rests.
Maybe, you know, he came up big last night. Maybe he'll do it for you in the playoffs.
You just like him because he's from Canada.
I do. I love Canadians generally.
You have a Canadian friend. I like Jason Bay. I think he's whatever level right below being maybe an all-star. He's on that next. He's definitely well above average. Nice guy. Do I trust him to carry the team in the playoffs like Manny could have? I don't know.
Now we'll see. You guys are going to win or die with pitching anyway. It's, you know, bullpen.
Yeah,
it comes down to the usual thing. So.
It's awful bullpen.
Okajima and Del Carmen don't really put a lot of fear of God into people, but, you know, you never know.
Ironically, the best reliever we have other than Papelbon right now is probably Masterson, who do I feel good about him coming into Game 5 in Anaheim, 2-2 tie, 8th inning. Crowd banging thundersticks, and young Jason Masterson comes jogging in to basically save our season. Do I feel good about this scenario? I don't. Not really.
This is is the podcast where you ask yourself questions. This is the.
I don't even need you.
You've never
just...
done that before. I don't think where you're like, do I want to do this? Yes, I do. We should do an entire podcast where we just ask each other questions and answer them.
The Riddler. We call it the Riddler.
This is the Riddler podcast.
I have to say, I'm just over the. I'm off the deep end with this whole Manny thing. I think it's worse living here. I've decided I lived in Boston, it wouldn't bother me.
Right.
Well, because I'd be caught in the hole. I'd be listening to the radio station and talking to other Boston fans, and we'd be complaining about what a scumbag Manny is.
Yeah.
And instead, I'm here, and this guy is like the savior. And
maybe Manny will just sign there. Maybe Frank McCourt will just give him a big payday, and you know he's rejuvenated baseball in Los Angeles. So it's worth. I can make the money back at the gate, and he can carry this team.
I will say this. I can't think of a better team in a better city for him.
I was just thinking of that. It's perfect. He has the most laid-back fans and press in the world. Nobody cares.
Yeah.
It's 75 degrees and sunny every day. Nobody cares if they win or lose or whatever. So, you know.
Don't forget about the bilingual thing.
That, too. That's true, too. Big Latin population. He's got a huge fan base for that. Sure.
I was watching them 2 weeks ago, and Angel Barroa, late of the Royals, really one of the worst offensive players of this decade in the American League.
Yes.
So he comes up for the Dodgers and hits a game-winning homer. And I think this was two or three Fridays ago. So then after the game, Angel Barroa, who allegedly can't speak English, he's interviewed by Patrick O'Neill, son of Ryan, who works for FSN. And Manny is on
Angel Barroa. Wait a minute, Ryan O'Neill has a son who's gainfully employed?
Yeah, see, this is the white sheep.
Confusing one. Yeah.
Yeah, this is the white sheep in the O'Neill family. In fact, I think Patrick O'Neill now pretends he's not related to Ryan O'Neill.
Yeah, really?
Like, hey, I knew your dad. What? My dad's dead. Manny Ramirez comes out as the translator, quote unquote, for this interview. And they're like giggling like school kids, and Manny's translating. So then O'Neill asks like the fourth question. And Angel Barroa starts answering it.
English.
Yeah, in English. And then catches himself. And then he looks at Manny, and then Manny translates it again. And now they're like really laughing.
Oh my God.
So then he asks the final question, and Patrick O'Neill and Barroa just answers it in English. And then they run off laughing hysterically, and Patrick O'Neill has this just dumbfounded look on his face. It's like, wow, I just got duped by two of the dumber people in baseball. But I was watching and thinking, like, God, oh, Manny, like, really? Like, now you're like, you're on bloopers, bleepers, and practical jokes with this Dodgers team?
For 2 years, he wouldn't talk to the press in Boston, and now he's like the wacky interview guy. It's crazy.
It just kills me, Johnny.
Just needed a change of scenery, Billy. That's it.
It's, you know, I always had the old girlfriend analogy with Clemens.
Yeah.
About how it was like you dumped her and then she went on Baywatch and lost 15 pounds and got fake ones and the whole thing. And I don't even know what the girlfriend comparison is for this Manny thing. It's one of those like he was begging for us to break up with him and just acting irrationally, and then finally we're like, all right, I don't want to do this, but I'm going to break up with you, and then just turned his life around within 10 seconds.
I think it's the girlfriend analogy with everything you just said, but then in the end she marries Tom Brady.
Oh, no.
You know, that's really what it's become for Manny. It's like, you know, he hit the lottery, basically. Sorry to bring up Tom Brady and Manny in the same breath. I'm sorry. That was mean.
Let's go back to the Yankees.
Yeah. So, geez. I mean, the thing is, in Hank Steinbrenner, I just don't – I mean, allegedly last year he wanted to do the Santana deal and was told no by his brother and by Cashman, and now I think with the new stadium and not making the playoffs, he's just going to be unleashed. And I'm very fearful of what he's going to do. He may just sign everybody. I mean, he may sign Manny and Teixeira and Sabathia and just he'll have this bloated – awful team. It's a very strong possibility.
Don't they have an inherent pressure to get a couple big ticket guys because of what they're charging for tickets next year?
Yeah, but the thing is, like, people say that, but, you know, people aren't going to go to Yankee Stadium if they have, like, Brett Gardner playing center field, the brand new Yankee Stadium that's like the talk of the town. People aren't going to go there.
Good point.
You know, I mean, come on. People went and watched the Orioles in Camden Yards and all they had was Cal Ripken because it was like the newest thing. This is New York. It's going to be like impossible to get a ticket for years, I think, regardless of who's playing there. You're still going to have Jeter and A-Rod and, you know, stars. So the notion that you have to have a star at every position, I'm not sure is true.
Does brand new Yankee Stadium include being able to go to a bar in the relative vicinity that I wouldn't want to like grab my beer bottle and fear the entire time that someone's going to come at me?
They haven't rebuilt the entire Bronx, just the stadium.
Oh, that's a step back.
Yeah, it's still going to be in the same neighborhood. It's not just across the street. So yeah.
So this is going to be like a beautiful house on like the worst, on the crappiest block.
Well, the thing is, I think that what they're going to do is they have so many alleged amenities now where you're not going to have to leave the house for anything that you would want or desire. Mm-hmm. I read about it in something, and it said it's like it basically like a 5-star hotel with a baseball field attached.
Hmm.
I mean, which is so pseudo because all they want now is like the pseudo corporate fan and. You know, sit there and enjoy your filet mignon and your Chateau Lafite and oh, what's the score of the game? Who's playing today? You know, just pseudo fans, but you're there to see people and be seen, you know.
It's so depressing. God,
it's
you
awful.
Just bummed me out.
I know, it's the worst. It's terrible.
Speaking of bumming you out, how is the mic without the Mad Dog era for you?
It's all right. He's like, he's really like so bubbly now. Like, he must have really hated the Mad Dog because... Like, to listen to him now, he's like, talk about, like, Manny and Burrow being schoolgirls. That's what he sounds like. Like, he's, like, bubbly, and he's, like, interacting with, like, the crew and, like, callers. And he's like, hey, thanks for the call. Come call again. I mean, it's like a whole different guy. Like, he must have really loathed the Mad Dog. Like, he must have just been, like, just drudgery to go to work every day. And now he's, like, reborn. It's funny.
I've listened to the Mad Dog this week a couple of times and have enjoyed the yesterday at Jim Courier on.
Oh,
we had him on for like,
tennis.
Yeah. Like 25 minutes of tennis talk, and Dog mispronounced maybe 15 of the top 20 male players, including some guy from Croatia who won the Australian Open. I don't even know his name, like Djokovic or something.
Yeah.
And Dog kept calling him one thing, and then when Courier would talk about him, he'd call him by the correct name, and Dog just undaunted would go back to his pronunciation of it. But he talked about tennis with Courier for like 25 minutes. By the way, I'm calling Courier's name wrong. I'm calling Courier.
Right.
And I kept thinking, like, if this had happened on Mike and the Dog, like, they would have gone to commercial. Mike would be like, hey, Dog, great segment. I'm sure the 5 people in America who care about tennis love that segment.
Right.
And then they just, like, would be throwing cokes at each other.
Exactly. Right.
And that's why they broke up, really. They had different interests.
They had different interests and different pursuits, and that's it. Yeah, he's got to be so happy doing tennis for a half hour, you know?
Mike, Jim Courier is a great guest. Hey, wait, why can't we talk tennis for 20 minutes? Hey, Dog, nobody cares, okay? Nobody cares. They have to be separated.
Exactly, right. That's funny.
I thought it was interesting that Mike kind of came out and said, you know, everybody's interviewing Dog and everybody gets to hear his side, but nobody's calling me. Nobody's calling me.
Really? I didn't see that. He was bummed out, huh?
It was on Newsday last week. Neil Best, who has been like the combination Woodward Bernstein.
Yeah, he's been all over this.
This whole saga. Yeah, he had Francesa's full rant about how upset he was that nobody was coming to him.
Really?
Yeah.
And he's the one that stuck around and still has to carry the fan. He's more of an, you know, interesting, well, I don't know if he's a more interesting story because the whole Dog thing is new and different and could fail miserably. So that's got, you know, that's got some attractiveness to it. But
does Mike have a sidekick or no?
No, but he like tries, like, you know, when they have like the 2020 update guys, he'll talk to them about like, you know, for 5 minutes about the Mets or whatever. And he kind of brings in like the guy who's the producer or whatever, like he'll ask him questions because, you know, otherwise it's just him talking to the air, basically, or callers. So he wants to like interact. He needs to interact with somebody, you know.
So it's like when Elvis had Joe Esposito and all those guys, and they just agreed with everything he said.
Yeah, exactly. It's the Elvis, it's the Memphis Mafia. It's the Queens Mafia or whatever. Yeah.
It was like the Tiny Elvis skit. Remember that?
Yes, I do, with Nicolas Cage. Yeah.
Look at that salt shaker. That thing is huge. Good point, King.
Yeah. Everybody needs a group of yes men. That's a good point. That's basically what he has now.
One last thing. We went to a wedding in Martha's Vineyard 2 weeks ago.
We
a destination
did.
Wedding for our friend Joe House.
Yes.
Destination, my wallet. He didn't appreciate that joke when I made it. Actually, I think he did.
Yeah, he had to like that.
It's yeah, fine. It was good. I think
it was a lovely, lovely island. Now, I'd never been to Martha's Vineyard before, and it was a nice wedding.
Would you go back?
Yeah, I would. I'd like to go back sometime when the sun was out. That would be a nice, refreshing change for my life.
You wouldn't want to go when it was raining the entire time? Yeah, that was a drawback.
The drive from the rehearsal dinner to the bar in Edgartown that lasted about an hour in the pouring rain was not one of the more fun experiences of my life. But
no.
Other than that, it was a good weekend all around.
The highlight, I think, was after the rehearsal dinner on Friday night, we went into Edgartown and we were at a bar. What was the name of the bar?
The Seafood Shanty.
The Seafood Shanty. And you could see the Chappaquiddick Bridge from where we were in the distance.
Well, there's no more bridge, but where it was.
Yeah. Where it was, yeah, whatever.
Now it's a ferry, but yeah, we could see the area where the famous Chappaquiddick incident happened.
It's kind of like New Yankee Stadium. It's the area had been rebuilt, but it's still the area where it happened.
It's still the area where it happened, yeah.
And that just led to 15 minutes of Air Rod jokes.
Exactly, a lot of Kennedy impersonations, and we had a similar blood alcohol level to Kennedy at the time, so it made it all the more fitting, you know. It's kind of like going to the Yankee farewell wearing a Babe Ruth jersey. It was very, very fitting.
And that led to a raucous 20-minute discussion on whether that was the most incredible moment in political history or not.
And about what would happen if a similar event happened today.
Yeah.
You know, like, imagine it's such a different time now in 2008 than in 1969. Like, if that happened today, I mean, it would make the O.J. trial look like a jaywalking incident, you know?
Also, if that happened today, I think for some reason there might be a TMZ.com paparazzi just happen to be there on the bridge as
well. That's true. Everything you do now is on, you know, if you're famous, everything you do is on YouTube now. So, yeah, there would be a video of the incident that would definitively show what happened. Yeah, there's no question about that.
So if you had to rank the five most unbelievable political-related things that ever happened, would that be your number one? For me, it's still Abe Lincoln getting shot at the play.
I like the way you talk about this, like you like lived through it. You're like, oh, when John Wilkes Booth was arrested, it was shocking to me.
That he shot Lincoln and then got away for like 12 days. Like
yeah.
In this crowded play, was able to just shoot Lincoln and then just run and actually get out of there without a car. If you had a car, I can get it, but
yeah,
when you're like on a horse?
I mean, he was the first president ever assassinated, so nobody could even fathom that would like happen in America. And the Civil War just ended, so everyone was like, you know, a couple of days before, basically, that Lee had surrendered, so they were like, happy days are here again, and they were like, it's John Wilkes Booth. It would be like the equivalent of Brad Pitt shooting the president. And so if Brad Pitt was in a theater and jumped down, like, you wouldn't immediately know what was going on. And they didn't have the technology like now. You could, you know, it was much more countryside. You could hide out. You had to hit out in the woods, basically, so.
You just proved my point. That it was the most
amazing thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would say so. That's got to be up there, certainly, yeah. But, I mean, I didn't know if you were talking, like, in terms of, like, scandals or, like, just political events. Yeah, I mean, that's tough to top that one. That's a big one, but.
Why? If you included scandals, what would you include?
Well, you'd have to have the Clinton-Lewinsky thing, certainly. Watergate, you know, Chappaquiddick.
Clinton-Lewinsky, I think, is up there only because once we saw what she looked like, it was so disappointing.
That was the real scandal.
If it had been Don Draper's new secretary for Mad Men,
yeah.
Everybody would have been like, all right, I can kind of see it. Like,
yeah.
You know, he's not getting whatever from Hillary and this girl's smoking hot. But I think the Lewinsky thing was so profoundly disappointing for everybody that it's probably, you're right, number two.
It's got to be up there. And well, obviously, just in terms of scandals, I mean, Watergate is number one because, you know, Nixon resigned. So that's got to be number one. Chappaquiddick, arguably.
It's number one in impact, though, but it wasn't that unbelievable when it happened. I mean, I know it brought down that entire presidency, but it...
No, well, not at the actual time of the break-in. I mean, the repercussions weren't for, like, two years afterwards, but...
It unfolded.
The real repercussions. But, I mean, Chappaquiddick, arguably, is the... But, I mean, you could say it's the reason that Kennedy didn't become president, but... I mean, he didn't run in 72, certainly, but he did run in 80, and he almost beat Carter... And he has been elected to the Senate for 40 more years after that. So, I mean,
well,
it's just an incredible thing. But yeah, I know it's Massachusetts, but still.
His mistake was not running in '84.
Against Ray? Oh God, he's a guy.
No. I'm saying you're not going to beat the incumbent if you're in the same party. Has that ever happened?
Has that ever happened? Well,
I can't remember that happening.
In modern times, not that I can recall, but I'm sure it must have happened. Well, it happened with, like, Teddy Roosevelt, sort of.
Yeah, we're going back, though.
Yeah, not. I mean, Reagan tried it against Ford in 76 and almost did it, and that Kennedy almost did it to Carter, but, yeah, almost doesn't count. So.
You know what I'd rank in my top five? FDR running the country in a wheelchair.
Yeah, and, like, very few people knew that he was in a wheelchair. Like,
yeah, and
if you're an average American, they wouldn't have known.
they kept it hidden in the other countries. Like, I don't think I ever really knew about it. Maybe they did. Maybe they found out at Yalta or wherever. I don't know.
But, yeah, I don't know. That's a good point. Like, if they did, they never made a big deal of it, like, in terms of, like, wartime propaganda, even our enemies that I know of, about him being in a wheelchair.
It'd be interesting if that happened now.
Oh, yeah.
Keeping that a secret.
I mean, guys knew, reporters knew about JFK and various women, too, and they kept that quiet. So it was a completely different time than it was now, you know?
Mm.
Now you're a politician. You can't, like, pick your nose in public without it being on YouTube, you know?
That's why everybody was so mad about the John Edwards thing.
Yeah.
It's like, in this day and age, you're just going to get caught.
Yeah,
how dumb
are you?
Anyway, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you can't possibly think you're going to... Well, he's a Democrat, so he knows the press is in the tank for him, so he feels he can get away with more, but...
One last thing. I have to ask if you saw Saturday Night Live last week.
Last week, yes, I did. There's been two of them. I've seen both of them.
How great was the looker?
It was great, and you actually prepared me for that because you had some inside knowledge about that.
But it was so... Fred Armisen is Petty Marshall.
It was fantastic. He was great. I love the fact that he didn't really talk at all throughout it until the end when he did, like, the promo. But just his look, he had her face down perfectly, like her mouth and everything.
I thought that was one of the best pieces the show's ever done, because everything was good. Like, even the part in the beginning where the girl was imitating the closer.
Yeah, she's cute.
That part was good. She had kind of a Botox-y face and had that weird expression.
Yeah.
Everything about that was great. I love that.
She's good, that Kristen Wiig. She's good on that show.
Yeah, I'm going to say there's going to be a little Ewing theory with Amy Poehler when she leaves.
Yeah, I agree.
Kristen Wiig steps up. Bill Hader's been stepping up, too.
Yeah. It should be.
I didn't really like the first episode except for the first segment. I thought the second episode was excellent.
The first episode, I thought, was really a letdown, especially when they have all summer to work on stuff or think of stuff, and it was sort of like, not a lot. Well, part of it was poor Michael Phelps, who's a wonderful swimmer, but...
That's the thing.
Acting comedy, I'm not sure, is his forte. You know,
I know it gets the ratings, but if you had, like, the guys from Baseball Prospectus, like, come up with some stat to break down successful hosts, athletes would be the least... Almost all of them have been terrible. I think Jordan might have been the best one.
There was his performance in that Charles Barkley show skit was really, like, it really hurt me. Like, I was in real pain.
And then I think because they have... I'll have to ask Seth Meyers about it, although he might not come back after this. I might have to it's like they feel obligated to include the athlete in athlete-related type sketches as a way to kind of break them over, but it might just be better to have them come out, have them two sketches, and then do what you're going to do anyway.
Yeah, just do regular stuff and just have him in the background or something.
James Franco was good.
He was. He was really good.
I was surprised. Who knew?
He was really good.
Yeah, he was excellent.
Who knew? Yeah, that's right. He was just the Spider-Man's enemy, and now look at him.
All right, I'll let you go.
All right, on that note.
So you're 10 out of 10 on the Yankees.
Yes, indeed. That's right.
All right, we'll talk to you soon.
All right, take care.
Enjoy the week.
Yeah, hey, you know, I can get a lot of sleep now. I don't know, I won't be staying up late in October watching any playoffs. That's good.
I think you look nice and refreshed.
Absolutely. I'll be raring to go in April.
All right, Johnny. Take care,
buddy. Bye-bye.
Whoa.
Thank you for downloading the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Too much fun.
Check out more podcasts at the iTunes Music Store or at PodCenter at ESPNRadio.com.
Peace out.